Good morning, I'm Leslie Thatcher, 8:06 on this Tuesday morning. It's March 24, 32 degrees here in Old Town Park City. And joining us from the ABC Forecast Center, Erica Martin. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie. Good morning, everybody. And this is meteorologist Erica Martin giving you your update for the next couple of days. We do have hazardous weather conditions in effect starting at 6 p.m. tonight or this evening until the 26th at 4 p.m. So keep in mind the National Weather Service has issued that statement. Temperatures for today are going to stay in the 40s and overnight lows in the low to mid 20s. Of course, we have to be mindful of those slick roads, and it looks like it's not going to be as far as accumulation, not much at all, about an inch total. And then Wednesday, we're going to see temperatures climbing into the 30s and then going back into the lows, into the 20s, overnight lows, and tracking the potential for the system to hang on until Thursday, finally clearing by this upcoming weekend. So you guys can always email me and always follow me on social media. That's WITHERIKAMARTIN, where I can also answer some questions about any weather.
Okay. Erica, hey, thank you.
Thanks.
KPCW News Time now, 8:07. And with a look in the backcountry on the phone with us from the Utah Avalanche Forecast Center, it's Trent. Good morning.
Hey, good morning, Leslie, and everyone listening. We're under partly cloudy skies. As you just heard, the mountain temperatures, however, are in the mid to low 20s at most elevations above about 7,000 feet. The winds right now are blowing west-southwest at 10 to 15 miles per hour and gusting into the 25 to 35 mile an hour range across those upper elevations. At 11,000 feet, which is, you know, a little bit about 1,000 feet higher than the Park City ridgeline, the wind is blowing 40 miles an hour, gusting to 60. So definitely some strong winds up there. Yesterday, we had a trace to about 3 inches of snow that fell throughout the Wasatch Mountains. For today, it's possible that we'll see a couple more inches of snow. And as you just heard, we do have a winter storm approaching tonight, 6 o'clock. It'll be heavy snowfall through the evening with some strong winds. This storm will continue through Thursday, bringing that mountain snow and colder temperatures. Possibly by Friday, we could see 18 to 24 inches of new snow in the upper Cottonwoods. Maybe 12 to 18 along the Park City ridgeline there. So definitely a pretty active storm that we have coming in. Our main concern today is going to be the avalanche danger is moderate on those upper elevation steep slopes, especially the ones facing north, northeast, east, southeast, and south. And that's going to be for triggering shallow drifts of windblown snow. So we need to evaluate that snow carefully and that terrain and be on the lookout for slopes that are being loaded by the wind. If there's the small chance that we're seeing more snow than expected this afternoon, sloughing will be likely in that steeper terrain. And we may end up getting some natural avalanches if the snow is heavy enough and comes in quick enough. And again, that's probably later this afternoon. And the last thing, keep in mind that the closed ski areas are performing no avalanche control work, and they must be treated as the backcountry.
Okay, Trent, thank you.
Thank you.
KPCW News Time, 8:09. Well, stay tuned. Coming up, we'll be checking in with Summit County Manager Tom Fisher, be taking a look at the agenda for tomorrow's county council meeting, and because it's going to be done virtually, remotely, he'll tell us how you can do that. Park City Planning Director Bruce Erickson will be in, taking a look at some of the issues they're working on and how the staff is dealing with kind of the social distancing. No meeting is scheduled for tomorrow. And finally, I'll be talking with the Executive Director of Nezzles and Co. We'll be talking about the increase in adoptions and how the public can help. Stay tuned. Taking a look at local news now, Governor Gary Herbert has ordered all public schools K through 12 to extend their closure through Friday, May 1st. 2 weeks ago, the governor ordered schools closed to circumvent widespread infection of COVID-19. With the increasing spread now throughout the state, the governor announced public schools and technical schools will stay closed through Friday, May 1st. State Superintendent Sid Dixon says they will continue to evaluate the situation before deciding if the schools will remain closed throughout the school year. In his directive, the governor acknowledges the additional work and stress that results from closing schools statewide, but he says it's a necessary step to stop the spread of the virus. The state continues to focus its efforts on slowing the spread of the virus to prevent the to overwhelming the healthcare system and hospitals. State Superintendent Dixon encourages families and students to remain socially connected through this period. She acknowledges the flexibility and initiative shown by Utah's educators in dealing with the challenges of teaching remotely. The statement says that meal services at K-12 public schools will continue on an as-needed basis. More statewide information can be found at coronavirus.utah.gov. KPCW News Time, now 8:12. The Summit County Council will be holding a virtual meeting tomorrow starting at 1:15, while the anchor location will be held at the Sheldon Richens Auditorium. The public can join online through a Zoom meeting or through the county's Facebook page or by telephone. On the phone with an explanation how it's all going to work and a preview of the agenda, I have County Manager Tom Fisher. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Leslie.
So if you will, just explain the mechanics of how the meeting will be held and who will be physically present at the Sheldon Richens Auditorium.
So the only people physically present that I'm aware of right now that will be at the Sheldon Richens building will be our IT staff, who will be facilitating the meeting. If there are public that do want to make comments during the public comment period, we're happy to accommodate that one by one in the room. We're of course having to follow our social distancing rules and suggestions for this meeting as well as any. So we're really trying to keep it down. We tested this yesterday, system yesterday, and it seemed to work pretty well. I anticipate that we'll probably have some glitches along the way, but we're going to try and make this work as best as possible. We certainly have kind of a light agenda of topics for tomorrow, so as to kind of dip our toe into this method. But this probably is our way to keep county business moving forward in the future.
Yeah. So what do you think is going to be the easiest way for somebody to participate? Through the Zoom invite? Or
if they want to have full access the same way that the council does and I do to the meeting, the best way is to sign into the Zoom meeting. If they sign in online, according to the directions that are on the agenda, they will have the same access. They will be placed in a mode where they can't speak to certain agenda points, unless it's a public hearing item or it's, you know, a topic not on the agenda for the public comment period. But that way they can listen in and certainly be available there. They can also dial into the meeting to hear it, just the audio of the meeting. It can also be put, it's going to be streaming on Facebook Live, and that method, if you're both listening to it and Facebook Living it, there's going to be a difference in the lag of the video. So it might not be the best method. And then the last way, if you're not comfortable participating electronically, you can certainly send an email of a public comment that you want to make to the email address that's listed on the agenda. And that would allow you to, we would read that into the record for this meeting.
Okay. And on Facebook Live, will people be able to give feedback there as well and that the council?
No, we're not going to be taking feedback on Facebook Live. That's just going to be a feed to watch if you want to watch or listen.
All right. Now, if you have people waiting for you electronically to actually say something, is the council going to stick to the schedule? Of course, we've had instances where the council runs late.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're going to have to work with the council on whether those times meet what you're trying to do. I mean, certainly the council always tries to do their public input period that's scheduled at 6. At 6, they usually accommodate very closely to that. But if it's a public hearing item elsewhere in the agenda, sometimes things go longer than are expected. And you'll be put in a queue, and when your time is up, you'll have your opportunity.
And how will citizens be able to access a recording of the meeting later?
I believe we're going to be doing that the same way, and the clerk's office will be posting that in their normal way. I haven't actually had a conversation about that. There will be a recording posted later, as we usually do. I'm not exactly sure how we're doing that at this point.
Okay. Any idea how quickly that's done? And the reason I ask is just because we're working here on scattered schedules, and that means that Rick wouldn't be here during the meeting itself. He'd have to access it.
I'm not positive what the schedule is on that.
All right. Let's see. Of course, in the last 24 hours, the county health department has issued a new health order. Why was this necessary?
Well, I mean, there were certainly some types of businesses that didn't get guidance out of the first order. And we've realized that through the week that there were things that needed to be put out. And those are around the building and construction trades, where we do have groups of people working on construction projects. Certainly hair, nail, and tanning salons, those types of businesses who have customers gathering in the business, or sometimes the point of business in those areas are closer together. Physical therapy clinics, child care facilities, and dental clinics. We got a lot of questions about those during the week, and we've decided to include those in our updated order in order to provide some guidance.
Again, and that's been posted online if people have any questions. The new order, though, seems to go against what Governor Gary Herbert's office said last week when Salt Lake County and Utah County said businesses could be charged with misdemeanors for not following the new limitations imposed. The governor's office said that businesses should not face any criminal penalty, yet Summit County's order issued yesterday said that businesses could, in fact, be charged with a Class B misdemeanor.
Well, certainly we don't do these things without a lot of communication between government, levels of government. You know, the main thing is that we're of course not trying to cite people criminally. That's not the point of this. The point of this is to put out orders, and the penalties aren't created by these orders. They're created by statute. The orders just bring those in, those types of penalties that already exist. And so, you know, our intent is to get these out and put these standards in place so business have something to follow. And if it does come to it that we do have to enforce, we would. But our intent is really to put the guidance out there.
So you don't think the state's going to come back and then ask you to change the ordinance?
We don't believe so.
All right. Where are we with the cases of coronavirus? I mean, we know it just keeps going up.
Yeah. So you know, we have cases all over our county. And right now, I believe the number is, as reported on public websites, that the county has 73. We do know, and this is something that we've been discussing internally because we've gotten a lot of questions about it also. You know, there's a sense sometimes that in our more rural parts of the county that, we don't have to worry about this. These cases are just on the west side of the county. They're related to tourism. So we don't have to be as vigilant. But I want to be very clear that although we're not pinpointing where these cases are in certain homes, they are all over our county, North Summit, South Summit. And the Basin and Park City all have cases, and more than one. So the reason that we're not pinpointing where these are is because we want people to stay vigilant and do the precautions that the health department has put in place to help control the spread of this. But given some of the feedback that we've gotten, we've wanted to be very clear that there is not a part of our county that's not being touched by confirmed cases.
So how will we know that the social isolation and the business shutdowns is working?
Well, I think certainly we're seeing that on a national level about, you know, whether the different levels of protections that states are putting in place have an effect. There's varying opinions about when the country and different states are going to see their peak. I would pretty much rely on our state epidemiologist and the work that she is doing with the state health department to give us the updates on how we're doing. Certainly, in Utah, it looks like we're still growing, and that's with pretty limited testing. I think we're in this for a little longer than we expected.
Yeah, and certainly with the shutdown, we are also seeing big changes to the transit schedule. Any idea what ridership's been like in the last week or so?
It really has gone down tremendously, which tells us a couple of things. First of all, that a lot of business is closed and our workforce is not using it as heavily. I mean, there's still workforce that depends on our transit system. That's why we're making sure that we still have a lifeline service available. But, you know, a lot of our tourists have left town, too. That's always a significant ridership as well. And then those that live here are mostly staying home. So we're curtailing the service so that we can get down to our kind of our base level of employees for that, so that we're not putting more people at risk in the community within the transit system.
Okay, and that was done in coordination between Park City and Summit County?
Oh, absolutely. All of that is done in coordination.
All right, let's see. Go back to the agenda. The major item will be a legislative update, a review of what was passed and what wasn't. I mean, are you prepared to talk about some of these?
I'm going to have to rely on the staff report. I've been spending most of my time on the COVID-19 emergency at this point, so I'm not as familiar with the staff report as I usually would be. So the things that Jana has highlighted in that staff report are what's going to be covered. Certainly, we won't be covering everything, but I think we'll be emphasizing some of the land use and perhaps some of the taxation issues that are out there or that were out there during the legislature.
Okay. The House Bill 388, that's the proposal from Representative Logan Wild that would have allowed anybody to subdivide and kind of threaten to scuttle land use law, according to Deputy County Attorney Dave Thomas. Do we know what happened with that?
Well, I do know that one was amended tremendously. Representative Wild was very receptive to counties and local governments' concerns about that. It went through a big negotiation. This bill actually was talked about all summer leading into the legislative session. As it turned out, our attorney's office was following this one during the session, we've become a lot more comfortable with where it's going and that it won't have the effects that we were expecting.
Okay, finally, just wanted to bring up the issue of the census. I think you'll be getting a report on that. Do we know what the census response has been so far in Summit County?
So far, we're about a week into the time that you can actually respond to the census. We're running at about 10% response rate within the county, and that's information that we've gathered from a census website that is actually tracking that. And it's pretty easy when you've got the electronic method to submit, and they're able to turn around those statistics pretty quickly. Last census 10 years ago, we were at 55% at the end. We're really trying to track above that this year. We're really encouraging, especially since a lot of people are home right now, that you pull out that envelope or envelopes that you've gotten in the mail and respond to the census. It's really going to help out your county, your local, your cities in the future to get as many people households responding to that in our county, so that we can really represent ourselves well when it comes to congressional representation or the distribution to federal funds to things like the health department. It's a big recipient of federal funds in the health area, and that's determined largely by census response.
And any particular area of the county that we know we need to improve? I heard the rural areas just hadn't even received theirs yet, their invitations.
The rural areas in the last census had a lower response rate, although there was one particular city, and I can't remember, I think it might have been Colville, but I could be wrong, that had the highest response rate in the county. So we all need to work together to bring up those numbers. And it may not sound like the most important thing going on right now, but it is very important for the next 10 years.
Anything else, Tom, you'd like to add?
I think I've covered everything, except that also the we have a business task force that has been stood up between local governments here in the county that are working on the business impacts of this current emergency. They have a survey that's out on the county's website under economic development. It's a COVID-19 business impact survey. We've tried to get a wide broadcast to the business community on that already. But if you haven't heard or seen about that and you're a business owner or just somebody that's interested and wants to see the survey, it's out there on our website.
All right. Tom Fisher, Summit County Manager, thanks for your time this morning.
Thank you very much.
KPCW News Time now, 8:29. Well, the Republican and Democratic state parties have canceled in-person precinct caucuses, which were scheduled for today. County conventions will not be held in person, nor will the April 25th state convention. The Utah GOP caucuses are canceled, and delegates elected in 2018 will continue to serve until 2022, which is when the next caucus would be scheduled. GOP delegates will serve in county and state conventions in 2020. Changes to in-person conventions are being determined. Democratic Party caucus and conventions will be determined individually by precinct chairs. All April 24th and 25th in-person events are canceled, and party leaders are working out the details of the best way to protect the public health while also nominating candidates. The Summit County Democratic Party anticipated the public health order to eliminate large group events when they met on March 8th. Instead of canceling the event, they do plan to hold a virtual online caucus. Summit County Democratic Party Chair Meredith Reed says anyone interested in participating in the caucus can sign up through the website. There are no Republican challengers for the two open Summit County Council seats this year, so candidates selected by the precinct delegates win the November election. She says it's a great time to be part of the county caucus because everyone is homebound and has the time to participate. Those who want to vote on their neighborhood delegates, she says, can do so at the caucus. 200 people have already submitted their names. You can go to scdems.org to learn more about the virtual caucus. We also contacted the Summit County Republican Party chair for comment, but had not received a response as of this report. The Wasatch County Democratic Party will extend precinct delegates until 2022 when the next caucus would be held. Their website states that they will move to a drive-by balloting system. To stay up to date, you can go to wasatchdems.org, and the Wasatch GOP will follow the guidelines of the state Republican Party and extend their precinct delegates until 2022. News Time 8:31. Coming up on 8:32 now, good morning. Well, after being publicly noticed last week, the Park City Planning Commission meeting scheduled for tomorrow has been canceled. Park City Planning Director Bruce Erickson joins us by phone to give an update on what the Planning Department is working on during the COVID-19 outbreak. Good morning, Bruce.
Good morning. Good morning, Leslie. Good morning, Park City. Yeah, we've got a couple things going on here, but we did end up having to cancel the March 25th meeting just in abundance of caution. We probably will not have a meeting April 8th. The Historic District Commission for April 15th, we're considering, and all of the items that were on tomorrow's agenda have been moved to the April 25th meeting.
So what were some of the big ones there that you're postponing?
Well, there's a couple things. The Planning Commission at the previous meeting went through a long work session about how to get to priorities of things they wanted to work on for 2020. and Planner Ward put together a calendar for the next year of things like housing and accessory dwelling units and height and density for affordable housing, parking, transportation, redevelopment, all kinds of things. That was supposed to be on the agenda as a work session. And we'll move that till the April 22 meeting.
Okay.
There are two technical things that we wanted to really get accomplished. The first one is hyper geeky. We're trying to get all our boards and commissions in alignment in the code with respect to what a quorum is, whether or not the chair can vote. And Board of Adjustment has an anomaly in the code about having an alternate that either votes or doesn't vote, depending on how many people are in the meeting. So we really wanted to try and get that straightened around and make sure that everything was, each board would match everybody else's code. We had a conditional use permit on King Road that was continued to this meeting. It's a legacy project coming out of the Sweeney master plan. Pat Sweeney lives in the house. For him to expand the house in accordance with the plat notes,
so
it has to be a conditional use permit.
Why not do a virtual meeting then if you think you need some of this approved?
We're working through that. We've had literally dozens of Zoom meetings in the past week or 10 days. The city council beta tested how to do a public meeting last week. We're struggling with a couple things. One is how we get public input, because the phone call in text messaging thing that was set up for the council sort of worked. We had four of our members auditing the meeting, four of my planning staff auditing the meetings just to make sure that we understood how public input was being taken. The second thing is members of the public don't always read the packet, and they just come to the meeting and get their impressions and listen to the planner and then give their comments. I haven't figured that one out yet either. And third, we're down to, in this department, everybody's working from home except one planner. So seven planners working from home, one planner's in the office every day, plus me. So it's really tough to bring this all together to get a proper meeting for the planning commissioners.
Okay, so they've got plenty to work on then at home. They all have their individual projects.
Oh, yeah. Everybody sends me a note every morning on what they're working on. We've got everything from arts and culture to Park City Mountain Resort. Planner Ward and Planner Tyler are updating our accessory dwelling unit codes, which they'll be bringing forward in May. They're working on height and density for affordable housing. So all of that plus all of the applications we've got in here, they're all plenty busy. They're all working from home. I wouldn't worry about workload right now.
Well, what if somebody does have something to drop off? Can that happen?
Yeah, absolutely. The front gate is open. We're here. Jessica is here every day, our planning operations manager. I'm here every day. You can drop something off. We'll take a permit in. It's not an issue.
And with the economy headed the way it is, what are your expectations? I mean, should we expect some kind of slowdown in applications? I mean, and would it be on the level of, what we saw back in 08 to 2011, 2012?
That's a really good question, Leslie. And I have to tell you, I don't know the answer to that. The real estate market is highly volatile, and depending on asset values, right now, the market is obviously dependent on the baby boomers and the second home retirees. The tourism market is dependent on whether there's discretionary income in the marketplace. I would expect that people are going to keep taking vacations. They just may not want to spend as much as they have in the past. There's a bunch of projects in the pipeline that I believe have been funded. I don't know that I would want to go to the bank and ask for money right now, but, you know, this thing is going to drop off, not off a cliff, but slow down.
Well, let's talk about some of those big projects. The Woodside Park Phase 2 affordable housing development was stuck in the appeals process with hopes that the city could begin construction this spring. Where are we with that?
Woodside Park Phase 2 is being reviewed by the city council and the staff to determine how we want to proceed forward, whether we can redesign, whether a redesign reduces the market condition of that project, and whether it still makes financial sense.
And if it doesn't, then we stop?
Well, then we rethink. You know, the city owns the Homestake lot out in Bonanza Park, where there could be 80 to 100 units that could move forward with, you know, with some incentive. So I think we can continue to deliver housing. I think Planner Ward and Planner Tyler are working with the city council right now to try and figure out what the best approach is on this one.
All right. Where are we, though, with that Homestake housing project? We haven't even seen plans for that yet, have we?
No, because the focus was on Woodside Park Phase 2. We are moving forward with arts and culture, and that involves planning for improvements to Homestake Road, which is the road that goes on the side by Starbucks there and around the Homestake condos, and Munchkin Road, which is the road that goes to Recycle Utah. So we're under conversations with that as part of the planning for arts and culture.
Okay, and when should we expect to see a Homestake housing project?
The council's still working on the priorities between Homestake and Woodside Park Phase 2. Woodside Park Phase 2 is way farther down the road in terms of design and engineering and trying to get things done. So the council just has to make a decision about how they want to handle the phasing.
All right. And then with the Arts and Culture District, have we seen any applications from the Kimball Arts Center or Sundance Institute?
No formal applications at this point. Planner Tyler is involved on a weekly basis with the design team on how this is moving forward. I would expect, the economy notwithstanding and everything else that's going on notwithstanding, I'm probably looking at an application in the next 2 months for arts and culture.
All right. And then what about the other housing, affordable housing project, the 100 Marsac? Anything there?
On 100 Marsac, we've not seen an application in. We're getting anecdotal information about the costs of doing development on that side of the hill. The council's going to have to decide whether they want to pay that bill or how we want to dispose of that property.
Okay. And what about the Park City Mountain Resort application?
Planner Aneth and Planner Jackson and Newberry are working on that application as we speak. We have some technical details to make sure that we have a complete application and our ability to review it consistent with our land management code. We are moving forward with city engineering on the traffic review and transportation review and how we improve transit to the resort. So the city engineer and our department are cooperating on that as well as transportation planning.
Okay. Because you thought that might be ready to go before the Planning Commission in April. Are you still optimistic that could happen?
We were planning for an April 22 meeting with the Planning Commission. The application is not complete, so we probably can't complete our review until we make the application deemed complete. We had a long conversation with the applicant yesterday about what we need to do to get the final details in here. The details we're talking about are how high the project is, what the heights they're proposing are, and details with respect to how much responsibility the project has for the current development agreement versus how much responsibility the ski side of the house or Vail has with respect to the development agreement for transit, historic preservation, employee housing, improvements to the road, snow removal, Master Homeowners Association. So all of those items we're working on right now in order to get a proper presentation to the Planning Commission.
All right. And with Deer Valley, we haven't seen anything with regard to their parking lots, but they do plan to kind of renovate, demolish part, the interior of the Snow Park Lodge. Have you seen those applications?
We have not seen the application for Snow Park, but I'm aware of it. And we're reviewing what it is they want to do and make sure it's consistent with that development agreement.
Okay. All right. Anything else, Bruce, you wanted to mention?
Yeah, the other thing we're missing from the meeting Wednesday night that gets pushed off to April is 2 years' worth of work with our fire marshal and Planner Jackson on wildland fire updates. That code, we keep trying to push this code out so that we can deal with wildland fire and make sure that we can protect the community. So that's trying to be worked out. It's a lot of work. The city council is going to have to make some hard decisions on it. It's going to be a forward-looking document where if you have a development activity, we're going to probably help you do wildland fire. If you already have a house, we're probably not going to make you do anything. We'll give you advice.
Okay. Hey, Bruce, thanks for your time.
Thanks, Leslie. Bye-bye.
That's Park City Planning Director Bruce Erickson. You're listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW. It's 8:45. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. Well, with huge numbers of people being laid off due to the outbreak of the coronavirus, we've heard about some of the programs available for people who will need help with their rent and utilities. But what about their pets and the animals they care for? On the phone with me, I have the executive director of Nuzzles & Company, Jamie Usri. Good morning to you, Jamie.
Hello. Thanks for having us on.
So first, are the adoption center at the outlets and the Browns Canyon Rescue Center open?
So we did close our adoption center at the outlets because of the community spread. However, up at the Rescue Ranch, up there in POA, you can still come adopt or foster, but we need you to call first to make an appointment. We are limiting the people in our lobby for social distancing. So if you just give us a call, we'll fill you in with an appointment. We can also do virtual FaceTime or Skype introductions of animals to you and then see if you're truly interested before you come down.
Okay. What's that number people need to call?
It's right on our website. If you go to the Contact Us page, I'm sorry, I don't have it memorized.
Okay.
But if you go right there, give us a call. The Rescue Ranch is going to be open 7 days a week from noon to five for appointments for the time being. Normally we're closed on Monday, but we're staying open now. And that's where you also can call to make an appointment to drop off any supply donations you might want to help us with.
Okay. And then like if somebody wanted to do a virtual introduction with an animal, they would also need to make an appointment?
Yes. Give us a call at that number. We'll set you up with an appointment and see what you're interested in on our website. Or possibly if you're interested in one of the pets that's currently out in a foster care home, we'll hook you up with foster parents to do the same thing with them.
Okay. And usually the entire family gets to come and meet their possible new future pet. You said you're limiting the number of people to how many? I mean, if it was
so
a family.
So we're trying to, say, only bring two people with to your appointment. We don't have the biggest lobby, so to help with the spread, two people is preferred. But again, if you do a virtual, and our staff does a great job playing with the animal and letting you really see their personality, you know, you can have as many people as you want there at your home.
Okay. So are you seeing pets get dropped off because people can't care for them?
We are not at our facility yet. However, we are hearing about it from our community partners. And that's one of the things we pride ourselves on at Nuzzles & Co. is that we rescue animals from shelters all over the state. These are, you know, animal control facilities and some private shelters, but that for whatever reason at times maybe are running out of space or resources, and our job is to come in there and take those animals and then care for them. And they are all anticipating a drop-off surrender increase at some point. And we really, you know, kind of like the social distancing we're doing right now, flatten the curve. We're trying to flatten the curve with that for shelter surrenders. By giving people resources now, they hopefully won't even have to consider it, and we could stop it before it starts.
Okay. So you're not a drop-off facility. You just take those that have been dropped off at others then.
Exactly, yeah. If you had a Nuzzles pet, we do always, for the lifetime of the pet, we will always take our Nuzzles pals back. But if you were to come into an issue, but of course we try very, very hard to keep them in the homes with medical care, et cetera. And we are offering a little bit of that to the community right now. Our veterinary team is willing to help with emergencies. Of course, we can't spend a ton of money on it, but if you were to have an emergency and could not care for your pet right now because of COVID-19, you absolutely should call our ranch and see what our veterinary staff can do for you.
All right. Any idea how many animals have been adopted? I mean, are you seeing more than usual? Are people, now that they're home, looking for a pet?
Unfortunately, no. And that's one of the other problems. Our adoptions and other adoptions at other shelters have pretty much plummeted. This last weekend, we only did 3, and normally we'll do 15 to 20. The one thing, though, is that the community is being great about fostering. And one of the big concerns, of course, is get these animals out into homes while adoptions are down so that they remain healthy, emotionally, and behaviorally happy. Of course, living in a kennel for a long period of time is not a good life. And the community has really stepped up and fostered dozens of our animals right now.
Yeah. So in terms of managing the facilities, keeping them clean and hygienic, how are you doing that?
Well, our staff is still working. We have, of course, done cleaning protocols and social distancing for them, as well as lots of PPE for them to wear. And thankfully, because the community has been so great about fostering, we have a very, very much reduced number of animals at the shelter that we're having to care for. I believe currently we only have about 7 dogs still in our care that have not already gone out to foster homes. What's great about that is that does give us the opportunity during this crisis to still rescue from other shelters. Not as much as we normally would, but as long as the community keeps fostering and hopefully some adoptions still happen here and there, we can still be looking at these other shelters that have no other options for their pets and see what we can take in for them.
Yeah, so you mentioned your staff's working, and you rely a lot on your volunteers. And they tend to be kind of that over 60 folks who are retired and come out to help. So are they still coming out and helping out? Or
Not as much. And we actually did recommend to them, you know, if you're in that age range, it's probably best if you just don't come in for the time being. While we appreciate you, we want to keep you safe. And we will provide PPE to any of our volunteers, gloves, masks. We're keeping our lobby incredibly clean. Every time a new appointment comes in, we clean it after. But, you know, it's better safe than sorry. And so we have recommended those people just don't come in now.
All right. Now, the Christian Center is helping people out with pet food support. Are you, you'd mentioned vet services. Are you able to do it with food as well?
We are. So we are giving away supplies that the community is donating back to the community. We're redistributing, basically. So if you donate dog food, cat litter to us, those are the most needed items, dry and wet dog and cat food. What we're doing with that is helping keep pets in homes, again, to not have more pets filling up shelters that might face euthanasia at some point. So at our ranch, you can call for an appointment anytime to come pick up a supply of food or litter. And we actually are even spreading down to Salt Lake because the need in Salt Lake is very big right now. We will actually be at Target located at 1110 South 300 West today in downtown Salt Lake from 1 to 4, giving out supplies to people that have been affected by COVID-19. And we intend to continue to do it as long as the community can keep donating and keep our supplies in stock.
Okay. And again, if a family is thinking of adopting, again, you suggest that they call first, schedule an appointment, maybe to do the whole family get together and then virtual get together and then have just a couple of them come out and meet the pet themselves.
Exactly. Yeah. So you're going to want to give our rescue ranch a call. That's the only location open right now. And I've pulled up the number 435-608-1424. That's our ranch that's just east of Park City there in Peoria. Little bit of a drive, but it's lovely. And if you call it ahead, make an appointment, or have called ahead and done a virtual meet and greet, then we will have you down to actually pick up an animal, adopt, or just meet again and see if it's a real match. Or we'll hook you up with the foster care parent that currently has the pet and get it done that way in a safe social distancing manner.
Okay. And again, people can continue to donate. I mean, if they don't have the supplies, they can certainly donate to go to the cause to help keep pets with
Absolutely.
Their owners.
Financial donations always help. They help us internally with the homeless pets for operations, which is great. And they'll help us to continue with any sort of community support. And that's just on our website, leslesandco.org/donate. Or visit our Amazon wish list, and we can link to that from our donate area of our web page, and ship supplies straight to the ranch. If you have a Prime membership, you'll ship them for free, and they come straight to us.
All right. And then what about your trips to the reservations? Are those still happening?
Unfortunately, we have had to temporarily postpone. We were supposed to do a spay-neuter clinic this weekend on a reservation, but because community spread is happening there as well, we temporarily postponed them. Thankfully, we had already done our March rescue trip to the Navajo Nation, so that's great, and all those pets are safe. But for April, we have just had to wait and see what is happening, not only up here in Summit County and Salt Lake, but what's happening on the reservations as well.
Okay, Jamie, anything else you wanted to mention?
We just are so grateful for everyone's support. You know, it's so important right now for us all to stay safe, but also remember those furry little friends out there that they don't know this is happening. They don't know there's a human crisis, and let's just not forget about them. And so far, everyone's being great about it, and we really appreciate it.
Okay. And Jamie Essery is the executive director of Nuzzles & Co. Thanks for your time this morning.
Thank you.
KPCW News Time now, 8:55. And again, that phone number to make an appointment, 435-608-1424.
More than 1 week after Summit County's initial order limiting the operations of restaurants, entertainment venues, and other places where large groups of people gather, Summit County Health Director Rich Bulla and County Attorney Margaret Olson approved an order that does the following. Prohibits gatherings of more than 10 people, though grocery stores and families in the same household are not included in that directive. Implements additional hygiene and cleanliness precautions at construction sites, prohibits employees from gathering in groups, and ensures employees who exhibit COVID-19 symptoms are not allowed to work. Restricts operations at hair, nail, and tanning salons, including rules for sanitation and hygiene, and requires shops to operate at 50% or less occupancy. Restricts physical therapy clinic operations by closing lobbies to patients and implementing remote or telehealth therapy visits for non-essential services, changes protocols for dental clinics to prevent spread of COVID-19, and requires child care centers to evaluate the health of employees and children each day, as well as asking a child's guardian about the health of other family members and taking additional sanitation and hygiene precautions. A violation of any part of the order could result in a Class B misdemeanor, though Bulla says it's not the county's intention to punish people. As the county has rolled out previous orders, Bulla says most everyone is already complying with them.
Technically, yes. We can issue and we can go after a Class B misdemeanor. We've not had to do anything like that. And it's a real important point to highlight that the community is, to be honest with you, they're ahead of us on this.
Bulla says much of Monday's public health order is in response to requests from businesses that weren't included in the county's orders from last week. Construction companies, daycares, and salons didn't have any rules or best practices in place from professional organizations, so the health department laid out the standards for them. More than anything, Bulla says the order outlines important guidelines for businesses and communities to follow.
We need to all behave as if we've been exposed, and we need to all social distance from people as if they've been exposed.
The county will reevaluate the public health order in 2 weeks, though the order doesn't expire until April 22nd. Emily Means, KPCW News.
And the International Olympic Committee has postponed this summer's Tokyo Games for a year as coronavirus deaths mount around the world and U.S. U.S. lawmakers close in on a nearly $2 trillion deal to cushion the economic damage from the crisis. The IOC acted on the recommendations of Prime Minister Shinzo Abe, adding the Olympics to a long roster of sport events canceled because of the deadly outbreak. Well, with more businesses closing due to the COVID-19 outbreak, Park City has scaled back its transit service again, the second time in as many weeks. When the two ski resorts closed for the season on March 14th and the restaurants and bars followed a day later, Park City Municipal reduced the transit service. Now, starting today, the service frequency and hours of operation on some routes will be cut even further. The Purple Line to Empire Pass and the Main Street Trolley have been temporarily suspended. Park City Transit is working with local public health officials to try and slow the spread of the disease. They are disinfecting the buses and the transit facilities and are asking riders who continue to ride the bus to use social distancing and good hygiene habits. Riders are asked to enter and exit the bus from the rear door to protect drivers. An exception, of course, is made for riders who need the ramp there at the front door. Riders are always asked to leave at least one empty seat between themselves and other riders. If there's no room in the bus to follow these guidelines, they do ask that you wait for the next bus. Service alerts are posted on the city's social media channels, as well as the MyStop mobile app, as well as online at parkcity.org. And Governor Gary Herbert's Economic Response Task Force will be presenting a three-phase plan to support Utah's economy through the public health response to the coronavirus today. That briefing will be held via a conference call starting at 2 o'clock. Presenting the three-part plan will be the governor, Lieutenant Governor Spencer Cox, Derek Miller, President and CEO of the Salt Lake Chamber and Chair of the Governor's Economic Response Task Force, Natalie Gochnauer, the Director of the Kim Gardner Policy Institute, Steve Starks, President of Larry H. Miller Sports and Entertainment, and Lavanya Mahate, founder of Saffron Valley Restaurants. We're up to 34 degrees here in Old Town Park City again, expecting a snow shower before noon, then rain and snow as we see temperatures warm up into the mid-40s, but cooling off to 26 overnight, 2 to 4 inches possible tonight. More snow on Wednesday with another 1 to 3 inches possible, warming up to 37. And again, more snow Wednesday night on into Thursday. We'll see a 34 of a high. This is KPCW Park City.